and algorithms and so on, I'm discussing a particular Markov chain problem that I've been interested in over the last couple of years. What we want to do is we want to sample colorings of a graph. So I think most of you know what a graph is and what colorings are, but just in case, remember, a graph, you got a collection of nodes, they're joined by edges, and a proper coloring is an assignment of colors to those nodes so that adjacent nodes must have different colors. And the types of the parameters we're going to be using here ensure that the graph will have at least one coloring, several colorings, and the goal is to select one of those colorings nearly uniformly at random. And the technique we're going to use to do so is to chain mixes. I'm even louder than presumably, right? This is on? Good. So the chain we're going to look at is very, very, very simple. You've got a graph, and you've got a particular coloring on the vertices. Let's say red, blue, green, blue, yellow. So here we're looking at, there's four colors on there right now. And at each, so you want to get another coloring. So what you do is you pick a vertex at random. Let's say we happen to pick this one. And then we change the color. And how do you change the color? Well, we're going to apply the Glauber dynamics, which there's a couple of versions. One version is you look at the vertex, and you look at the set of colors which are permissible for that vertex. So in this case, red and blue are ruled out. So we better use, we can't use red and blue. So we look at all the remaining colors. Let's suppose these four colors are the only available colors. So we pick a random color amongst yellow, green. And suppose it turns out to be green, we just assign it and then continue, different step. Another possibility, another slightly different version is where we pick the vertex, and we pick at random from all possible colors, including red and blue. And if we happen to pick red or blue, then we don't change the color. So we only change the color if we successfully picked a vertex that we can switch to. And the question, we'd want to show then that this chain is rapidly mixing. Now the parameters, so... it turns out to be uniform. Yeah, it's not so hard to show that. Now, what we want to do is we're going to look at how many colors are used. Yeah? That's just a definition of the graph, proper coloring of the graph. So, yeah, you want to pick an assignment so that no two neighbors have the same color. So what we're going to show is the more colors, the easier it's going to be to prove this is rapidly mixing. And so one important parameter is going to be the number of colors that we use. Another important parameter is going to be the maximum degree. The degree of a vertex is the number of edges coming into it, or the number of neighbors. And so in this graph, the largest degree is 3. These two vertices both have degree 3. So we use delta to be maximum degree. And we'll use C to be number of colors. And we want to know, given delta, for what values of C does this chain turn out to be rapidly mixing? And the hope, the conjecture is, the feeling is that it's rapidly mixing if C is at least delta plus 2. And this is a natural point to look at, delta plus 2 versus delta plus 1. Because when C equals delta plus 1, you can get locked. It's possible to get locked. You have a vertex. Take a vertex of degree delta. In this case, I got delta 5. And suppose we've only got 6 colors. It's quite possible to have 5 different colors down here And then it's not possible for this one to change its color, okay? If you've got five down here, so you can get locked. And in fact, if you've got a clique, then this thing locks. If you've got the complete graph where all edges are present, this thing locks up really well. So if you want to prove something's true for all graphs of maximum degree delta, you want to aim for delta plus 2. So we can't really get down to delta plus 2. We prove rapidly mixing for various settings for graphs with certain conditions, like high girth and so on. I'll specify that later. And so what I want to do today is I want to kind of whip through a series of steadily improving results that have come up over the last couple of years. I really like this sequence of results. In each case, you can kind of point to one really clever idea that allowed people to improve on the previous step. So I'm going to whip through a few of those results in that series and try to highlight the clever idea in each step. And I'm going to be omitting all the tedious hard work that is required to convert that clever idea into a proof. So you're just getting an overview of the intuition today. Now, the first result along these lines is many years old now. Jayaram and independently Salas and Sokol proved that you get rapid mixing if C is greater than delta, or 2 delta. So C greater than 2 delta gives rapid mixing. Rapid mixing means that before very long, the distribution of the coloring you get is going to be pretty close to the uniform distribution. Pardon me? Oh, okay. Say the L2 norm. Yeah. So, there's a nice quick proof of this that sort of going to give an outline of the proof of the next several things I'll be talking about. So I'll give you a quick proof of this. We're going to use coupling. And so the idea is you start with two different colorings. You let the adversary choose two different colorings. And we'll run our Markov chain in parallel on those two colorings. And we're going to couple it, okay? Which means that there'll be dependency between the choices made in each chain. And the goal is to show that before long the colorings will coincide. They will end up with the same color. And if that's the case, then that, you know, once you get specific about what before long means and so on, then that means that you get rapid mixing. Because, I mean, what is it that affects the distribution on a coloring 1,000 steps into the chain? It's really just what the initial coloring was. And so if you're not uniform 1,000 steps into the chain, it's because by picking the initial coloring you can change what it's going to look like down there. If the initial coloring was uniformly at random, then at any step you end up with a uniformly random coloring. And if you show that no matter which two initial colorings you choose, you can get the colorings to drift together, that really says that by the choice of the initial coloring can't really have much effect on the coloring you end up with. So that's the intuition as to why this coupling produces, by proving this coupling statement, that implies rapid mixing. Okay, and to formalize that, Aldous is the first one to formalize it. And it doesn't take that long once you realize that that's your goal. So we start with two colorings. Let's say X, comma Y are two initial colorings. And then we'll make a sequence, X1, X2, X3, Y1, Y2, Y3, and that'll be our Markov chain. And we want to show that eventually you're going to get XT equals YT. And what we're going to keep track of along the way is the Hamming distance. So H of XI, YI equals number of colors at which they differ, or number of vertices, sorry. Okay, so the number of vertices in the graph where you have different colors. And the goal is for this H to get down to 0. Once H reaches 0, then we've got identical colorings. And what we want to keep track of is the expected change in H from one step to the next. And our goal is going to be to show that the expected change is negative. Okay? So we're going to get expected value of H of XT plus 1 YT plus 1 minus H of XT YT equals, well, something negative, okay? Less than 0. And then once you get this next than zero, then it's fairly straightforward to show that we're drifting towards zero, and so before long we're going to hit zero, okay? Just like we want. What we're typically going to get is that it's negative epsilon over n for some constant epsilon, okay? And when you punch that in, it turns out that gives that you'll probably be identical. You'll drift to zero at about n log n steps, and that's best possible. It turns out that it suffices to compute this expected value. Pardon me? Oh, I'm sorry. N is the number of vertices in the graph. Okay. So the standard parameters amongst graph theorists aren't necessarily well known in the broad world. So N is going to be the number of vertices in the graph. It turns out that it suffices in a way to do this analysis for the case where they differ in only one. And I won't quite explain why, but there's a very elegant thing shown by Bubbly and Dyer using a technique called path coupling, where they showed that basically if you can do this analysis for the case in which the Hamming distance is 1, then that'll suffice to do the whole thing. And I won't really have time to explain why, but it's very nice. So now we've got a graph, and we've got two colorings. And they agree everywhere except on one vertex. So I'll focus on the vertex, let's say V, where they disagree. And let's say in one coloring, in X, V is assigned red, and in Y, V is assigned blue. Okay. And we want to know what's the expected change in H. And it's either going to go up 1, down 1, or stay the same. So we really, to prove this, we just want to show that the probability that it drops to 0 is greater than the probability that it increases to 2. Now let's look at the version where we pick a vertex and we assign a vertex one of the available colors. Okay. The fact that we've got more than delta colors implies that there's going to be at least one available color. So what's the probability that we drop to 0? Well, we're going to drop to 0 if and only if we pick V. Okay? And to see why that's the case, I'm going to have to explain exactly what the coupling is now. So here's the coupling. In X, we pick a random vertex and pick a random color. Okay? In Y, we pick the same vertex. And if possible, we pick the same color. And in a couple of minutes, I'll say what we do if it's not possible. In this case, whatever color we pick for V and X, we'll also be able to pick for V and Y because they have the exact same, I mean, the colors down here determine what's available for V. And the colors down here are the same in both chains. Okay? So we will be able to succeed in assigning it the same color. So probability 1 in N, we pick V, we give V the same color in X and Y, and now we've got an identical color. So that's the probability that H drops to 0. Probability that H goes to 2. Okay. Well, in order for the Hamming distance to increase, in order to introduce a new vertex on which they disagree, that vertex better be a neighbor of V. Okay, we better have picked something like this. Because if we pick something that is not adjacent to V, then once again, in both chains, the neighbors of this vertex will have the same color, so we'll be able to give them the same color. Okay. So the only way in which we might not be able to assign the same color is if we pick a vertex that's adjacent to B. So for example, perhaps we choose this vertex for X, and we attempt to assign it color blue. So X picks this vertex, Blue is available to this vertex because Z is colored red. And so we give this vertex color blue. Okay. Y then takes this vertex, but Y no longer can color it with color blue. So Y's got to choose a different color, and they're going to end up disagreeing. And so what do we do in the case where they might disagree? Well, we do a maximal coupling. I won't take the time to say exactly what it is, but it's an easy exercise to show that if you do a maximal coloring between the color assignment in X and the color assignment in Y, meaning you couple the assignments in a way to maximize the probability that they agree, then you get the probability of disagreement is at most 1 over the number of available colors. Okay? Basically, it's the chance that you pick blue here. So the probability that H goes to 2 equals, well, there's at most delta of these vertices that we might pick to make a disagreement on. So delta times 1 over n, chance that we pick that one, times 1 over, well, the number of available colors. We can't quite say that because the number of available colors differs from vertex to vertex. But we'll get an upper bound or a lower bound of the number of available colors. The number of available colors is at least C minus delta, right? C is the total number of colors, and each vertex has at most delta ruled out. So the probability that H goes to 2 is less than or equal to that, and we want this to be less than this, and now it's fairly easy, right? We want delta over C minus delta to be less than 1, okay? And that just means C is greater than 2 delta if you rearrange that. So that's where we get the C greater than 2 delta proof. Very short, very elegant proof. Okay. Short in the points that I told you. I also omitted a bit of a few things, like why it suffices to only focus on the case with a different one point. But that itself isn't so long to prove either. It's kind of it's nice and elegant as well. Okay. So so that's the classic starting point in this thing. When C is greater than 2 delta, we win. So the best improvement even to date, and this is by now about 5 years old, is when C is greater than 11/6 delta, so a bit smaller, and this is due to Vigoda. He proved that in that case a different, more complicated chain will mix rapidly. And that implies that this chain mixes rapidly, but you don't get n log n time anymore, you get n squared log n. Okay, so there's a nice translation theorem. In most cases, if you can prove one chain mixes rapidly, you can get a corollary that most other chains mix rapidly. Okay, so he sort of went through a different chain, proved it mixed rapidly, and then proved this mixes rapidly with a slight loss in the mixing time to n squared log n. And this still stands as the best for general graphs, maximum degree delta. If you got at least 11/6 delta colors, you win. And it's been many years sitting there, and we can't seem to do better. So more recently, a number of people have been doing is trying to not do it for general graphs, but to specify a few helpful properties about the graph. And so if these helpful properties hold, then we can get rapid mixing with fewer colors. And the key helpful property is going to be that the graph has high girth. Now, the girth is the length of the shortest cycle. So we're going to say basically that the graph doesn't have any small cycles. And that's going to be helpful. See why in a moment. Yep.
Willing to allow some slower mixing.
Not in polynomial mixing. So not for any polynomial. Yeah. So which board do I think I'm going to use? So this is a result of Friesen-Dyer. I guess it's 3 years old now. If C is at least, and it's a number that's a little bit smaller than this, 1.76 or so. Okay? The number's not so as important as the proof that yields it. Then we get rapid mixing if we've got some special properties. And the properties are large girth, that's the key property, and large maximum degree. And the large maximum degree is kind of a technicality, annoying technicality in this proof. So we times delta, thank you, times delta. And the properties are delta has to be big. Delta has to be at least order log n. So some large constant times log n. and the girth, so the length of the shortest cycle, is some large constant times log delta. And the way they prove this is as follows. What you want to do is you want to improve on some of the on this number right here. So this number was the size of the largest lift. And we said the lift has to have size at least C minus delta. And why does it have to have size C minus delta? Because it could have at least delta, up to delta forbidden colors in the neighborhood. But that's very pessimistic. You would hope that maybe there'd be fewer than delta colors in the neighborhood. Hopefully there's some repeats amongst its neighbors. And what Friesendyer did was indeed show that you get enough repeats to lower this. And the idea was, let's pretend that these are all uniformly independent random colorings appearing in the neighborhood of a vertex. Well, I don't want the neighborhood of this vertex, I want the neighborhood of a different vertex. Really, it's the neighborhood of this vertex I care about. So in a typical vertex, I look at its neighborhood, and let's pretend, this is a big cheat, but let's pretend I've got uniform, independently random colors appearing there. Okay. And if I do, it's highly unlikely that they'd all be different. Okay. In fact, I can work out exactly how many different colors I expect in here. It's a nice Poisson variable. Okay. And if I work out the expected number of colors here, or the expected lift size that I'd get with these being uniform independent, and I plug that number in here instead of C minus delta, the worst case, then I just have to make, you know, I put that number here, then I get C greater than 1.76 or so delta. And I'll leave out exactly that number. It's a little exercise for you to work out, but it's a detail I'm going to leave out. Now, of course, that's it's sort of a big assumption to make that we've got uniformly random colors here. Okay. Let's pretend the whole coloring was uniform at random. Okay. The fact that we've got big girth might make us think that the colors here are close to independent. Okay. If I had a lot of edges here, then they're certainly not independent. Okay. But as long as there's no edges, there's a chance that they're close to independent. And with big girth, it just makes they really are close enough to independent. But it's sort of a big assumption to say that it's a uniformly random coloring because our whole goal is to get to a uniformly random coloring. So we can't just assume we've already got one. But you don't really need a fully uniformly random coloring. If you've got something that's sort of close to a uniformly random coloring, then you work out the expected number of colors there, then that turns out to be close enough. So what you really want to show is that the lift size is pretty close. It's within epsilon or so of what you would get if it was uniformly random colors, independent uniformly random. Okay. And then that allows you to get arbitrarily close to this 1.76 number. And how do you prove that? Well, it's tricky. I'm not going to say. But the point is that what they could show is if you ignore this calculation until t is already of size order n log n, so you don't bother thinking about calculating this until you've already gone n log n steps. Then they get this nice burn-in period. And after that period of time, every vertex has been hit several times, right? You've gone n log n steps. You figure, on average, you've been hit log n times each. And since each vertex has already been colored several times, you can show that you're getting pretty close. All right, you get close enough. And it's a fair bit of work to show that, but that's the intuition. Now, my contribution in this sequence was to improve this number somewhat to 1.48 something. And basically the idea here was I don't improve this number any further, but I improve this number. See, here we're assuming that every neighbor of V has a chance of making the distance increase by one, of having a disordering color. But if we've got a nice, sort of close to uniform random coloring going on already, there's going to be a lot of vertices who, if you look at their neighborhood, you've already got a red and a blue on different neighbors. Okay? And if we manage to hit one of these vertices, then I can't possibly update it with either red or blue. So this becomes sort of a vertex that well, like I say, it can't hurt us. And so basically, similar calculation, assume nice uniform random coloring. We've got nice big girth. So, you know, everything here looks like a big tree if you spread down far enough. And so have to do a lot of technical work to show that the numbers yielded by these calculations actually pan out for you. But once you work out the expected number of vertices here that have both a red and a blue in their neighborhood, then that improves this delta a little bit. Okay? And you plug in the new number you get here, i.e. the expected number of vertices that don't have both red and blue, and you plug in the improved number Dyer and Fries got here, and you get all the way down to this 1.48 and so on. And then the third improvement along that line was by Hayes and Vigoda, came out a bit later, where they actually got it all the way down to 1 plus epsilon. So C is at least 1 plus epsilon delta. So pretty much what we're aiming for, right? We want C to be at least delta plus 2. So asymptotically, they're all the way down there. But of course, there's this condition about maximum degree and girth. And the idea was what they're going to focus on is these guys that have, say, exactly one, just red here. And so what happens here, if you pick one of these vertices, you manage to update one of the chains but not the other one. And basically what they showed was they considered a future step at which, you know, suppose you manage to hit the X chain but not update X but not Y. They looked at a future step where you manage to update Y and not X on the same vertex and kind of coupled those two steps together. And it was a very different thing because they had to do a non-Markovian coupling where you don't essentially just, you do the X choice and you don't pick the Y choice that step in effect. You have to look many steps into the future and then go back and decide how we're going to couple Y in this case. So it was a very different look at it. And they managed to get, essentially you can think of a one unit of savings on each of these guys because they can't possibly contribute one. They managed to get a half a unit here. And between this and this, you know, I'm going way too fast on this, but there's too much to say here to be able to give a nice thing. But you plug in the numbers, expected number of times you get this, weighted a half in the way I weighted at one here, and they get all the way down to 1 plus epsilon. So it was very, very nice. And they had another improvement in here. This girth at least log n step, at least log delta, Hayes actually, before the paper I just mentioned, got to 1 plus epsilon, he managed to prove this same number, 1.48, that I had, but with constant girth. So he just required girth at least, 6 in this case. So, I mean, a dramatic improvement, right? We had this function growing with delta, and as long as there's girth 6, he's okay. A nice Gould would be get all the way down to girth triangle 3 would be reasonable. And actually, very recently, Hayes and Vigoda actually got down to triangle 3 for this case, the 1.76 case. You need more than triangle 3 for the 1.48 because in this case we're examining vertices colors all the way down here, so you don't want edges down here. They kind of mess you up. So, you know, 5 cycles already mess you up going down there. I won't say much about that one, how we got down to constant girth. It was a very nice idea. But, you know, there's only so many nice ideas one can talk about in a limited time. But that nice idea applied as well when they went to the 1 plus epsilon delta. And so there with girth 9, delta at least, beta log n, they get rapid mixing. So the state of the art right now in one direction, well, there's a few different directions to get state of the art. One is this 1 plus epsilon. That's you know, about as good as you can hope to get, except you got delta order log n and you got girth up as high as 9. Okay. If you want to make the girth as low as you can hope for this technique to work, you want it to be triangle free. And there it's this Hazen-Vigoda result where, again, delta's got to be size order log n. But you're triangle free, but you got this many colors. So there the girth requirements about as good as you can get for this technique, but the colors aren't quite as low as you'd like them. And that's using a technique that I think he's talking about in the next lecture, so you may see a bit about that. And also recently, Hazen-Vigoda, Dyer, Fries managed to get rid of this high delta requirement. So they have delta at least a large constant. And the only remark I'll make about that is the reason we want a delta to be at least size log n here is we said, what's the probability that the number of colors here don't, aren't close to what we'd expect? So you take a nice uniform distribution, what do you expect? What's the probability that you're not near what you expect? Well, it's going to be exponentially small in delta. It might not be surprising if you're used to this sort of thing. And so when delta is like log n, then the probability is less than 1 over n, and so you can say that all the vertices will be nice. And what they did was by being much more careful, they said, well, they managed to focus only on the vertices near V, and they took a large neighborhood but constant size near V, and they said all we care about is that all the lists in this big neighborhood are nice. And it took a bit of work to make that suffice. But as soon as you had said that, you only need a constant number of neighbors nice, vertices to be nice. And so the probability of being good can drop to a constant. And so you can make this at least a large constant. Okay? So that's all I'll say there. Like I say, I wanted to tell you about this problem. It's a great problem. The big goal is still open, to have for every graph, delta plus 2, we got rapid mixing. And there's been, like I say, I like this long series of results. Some very nice improvements, very clever ideas one at a time. And the nice thing is that we're actually getting fairly close. You know, the fact that one of them is down to 1 plus epsilon, I think is very nice. I don't know if we're optimistic that we'd end up that close when the first result came along in this series. So that's all I'll say.